My understanding is that Malaysia is not really cooperating at all. They're very reluctant to lay what they have out on the table. There's been no terrorist connections whatsoever. There's been no terrorist chatter. There's nothing out there indicating it's terrorist. Doesn't mean it's not. But so far, nothing has been picked up by the intelligence community from day one. I still have questions about the two Iranians around the plane. The pilot and co-pilot should have been the focus from the start. That would be ordinary law enforcement, investigatory procedures. This is going to be a criminal investigation as far as the pilot and the co-pilot. We should use as much international law enforcement as possible. The FBI is the best at that.
All right, so that is Congressman Pete King, one of the talking heads, giving his opinions on the Malaysian Airlines crisis. What's your opinion? That's where we stake our claim in this hour on America Tonight. Among the things we're going to be talking about, is it terrorists? He said, well, kind of dismissing that, although that's the opposite of what is coming out of Europe. In fact, there is somebody who is saying that they've spoken to the what they're calling the Malaysian would-be hijackers, because it's very strange that the missing plane's tracking device was disabled before they said, all right, good night, and then that was it. And then that's when they made the turn. So now, guess what? They are looking at the co-pilot, and the pilot went to their homes and took a bunch of stuff away from the homes and found a flight simulator in the pilot's house. And there is also a report that Shahid Mohammed Badaf, a British-born al-Qaeda informant, actually said last week in court, because now it's been over a week, that he was aware of a plot by a group of Malaysians, one who was supposedly a pilot, to hijack a plane. Is it just nonsense that he's creating, or is it real? Badaf said he once supplied the cell with a shoe bomb, and that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the 9/11 mastermind who's at Gitmo, was the plot's original organizer, so leading to whether or not the evidence is credible. Badaf is in hiding because he's afraid. He said he met the Malaysian jihadists, again, one of whom was a pilot in Afghanistan, gave them a shoe bomb. By the way, he supplied the bomb to use to take control of a plane. So when there is planning involved, it takes a long time often to implement these plans. So is this part of the plan or not? The same guy told the court, and this is in England, that the Malaysian plot was being masterminded by Mohammed, again, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was the architect of 9/11, right, if you believe that. So here we go. The missing Malaysian airliner, where is it? Where is this plane, and what has happened? No trace of the Boeing 777 since it vanished March 8th with 239 people on board. But they do believe that it was diverted by someone who knew how to switch off the communications and tracking systems. Geez, so who do you think that was? What's your theory on this missing plane, and how concerned should we be in the U.S. about that missing plane? Let's go to Izzy right off the bat in Missouri. Hey, Izzy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about this plane is somewhere, if it has not crashed, depending on how much fuel was loaded, it's hiding somewhere, because planes bring in a nice big amount of money when they're on the market for sale because terrorists want planes.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes me curious, they're sort of zeroing in on the Indian Ocean. But what do we have out there in the Indian Ocean?
That would be what? Go ahead.
Diego Garcia Island, one of the most critical radar stations of America. And I mean, they have the best of the best on that island. And we also use skin paint radar, which I don't understand why we're not hearing anything from what the U.S. is doing when we have capabilities that can zone in on things many miles down into the ocean and just about everywhere.
Yeah, and we'd have to use that because the Indian Ocean, like you're saying, that the island you're talking about is pretty much uninhabited except for those
military
researchers. Yeah, military and
it's
researchers.
All military with, yeah, the, with a few civilian employees. Other than that, there are no inhabitants. But in the Indian Ocean lies that chain of atolls, Maldives?
Mm-hmm, Maldives.
Okay. And there are over 1,000 islands, some of which are totally uninhabited, but are flat enough to land a plane.
Mm.
And I'm not understanding why we have not zeroed in on this. I have not heard a word. And I was talking to my brother, who is Navy, was Navy, and my nephew, who was Navy. And he, there, before they shut down the Eisenhower, they went past Diego Garcia. And because they took supplies. That's the only way they get them, airlift or by ship. And he was saying, this is getting creepier and creepier. He doesn't believe the plane went down. He thinks it was flat out hijacked for sale.
Wow, that's an interesting theory. That, sure, if you had the money, which we know there's money linked to terrorism, you could get the plane.
And even
kill,
though this
kill
pilot
the passengers
evidently was very, very experienced. Do you realize, I don't know that most people don't realize this, but during the 9/11 attacks, those pilots that trained, they bypassed all the landing training. All they trained for was takeoffs.
Yeah.
And I was scratching my head, and I'm like, well, they didn't need to worry about landing. They weren't going to land.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem with a lot of these pilots that are training. They're not worried about landing. They're training to get that plane up in the air and to its destination, which is another big threat to this country because, and I just recently read again, they have a whole list of sites they want to bomb here. And, of course, it just came out, too, that Al-Qaeda has called for taxi or car bombings all over the United States. And that was just on Drudge, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute. Okay, so there's a campaign here. There is a little campaign setting things in motion, and this country is not doing a damn thing. I haven't heard a word about this country really doing a damn thing when we have the most sophisticated radar on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
So,
good point, Izzy.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Izzy's right about that. We are involved in this search for this Malaysian plane, but we're one of like 24 countries, and they're not completely relying on the United States. She's absolutely right about the sophistication of the equipment that we have. The Indian Ocean, as you all know, is one of the most remote places in the world and the deepest. So it's pretty challenging if you were looking for wreckage or flight voice and data recorders, all that kind of stuff. But it is getting very creepy that there are other scenarios flying around out there, and that could this plane be have landed someplace else? And ultimately, what is the focus now? The focus has shifted to foul play for sure. Kevin Camp's next, and then we're talking a little St. Patrick's Day. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Amanda Bofield here from Midas Resources. Today, March 14th, 2014, gold opened at $1,387.50. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,437.37, $718.68 for a half ounce, or $359.34 for a quarter ounce. Again, that's $1,437.37, $718.68, and $359.34.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
So we decided to upgrade the look of our home.
You know, improve the curve appeal.
We decided to add the look of stone to the exterior.
We really like the stacked stone look.
Yeah, but when I checked into the price, it was ridiculous. No way could we afford it.
Then a friend told me about Genstone. G-E-N-S-T-O-N-E.
Genstone comes in lightweight panels made of polyurethane. They've actually engineered the hassle out of installation. No mortar, no mesh. It was easy. Even I could do it.
We just screwed the panels to the wall and it looks like stone. I mean, it really looks like stone.
Yeah, from the box to the wall in minutes.
We love the look of our home now.
And Genstone is durable, comes with a 25-year warranty, and offers additional R-value for insulation.
If you want the look of stone at a price you can afford, call Genstone.
At 855-955-STONE.
Trust me, you'll save money.
And you'll love the look.
855-955-STONE. That's 855-955-7866.
Hard to believe it's been 3 years since that tsunami, think about that, crippled a big chunk of Japan right there at Fukushima, and everything that's resonated with that power plant since then. We've talked about it along the way. Joining us in our virtual green room, we're hoping he doesn't blow away, is Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear. And there's so much to talk about with that horrible plant catastrophe that happened, and it continues to roll on. Kevin, thanks for joining us on America Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So now as we look at this 3 years later, what are your concerns in seeing what's happened with the reactor problem and then another reactor problem? What kind of a job, in other words, do you think the plant is doing after that initial accident with the tsunami?
Oh, it's an ongoing catastrophe for the ocean, for example. They're having 80,000 gallons of radioactive groundwater flowing into the Pacific Ocean every day that's radioactively contaminated. And just today, Tokyo Electric and its American advisor, a former chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission who we butted heads with a decade ago, named Dale Klein, he's a paid consultant now to Tokyo Electric, they floated a trial balloon today about releasing really millions of gallons of highly radioactive water that's currently stored on site there into the Pacific. So this is, you know, a catastrophe already for the ocean, and they want to make it a whole lot worse.
Wow. And there's a good reason. I mean, of course, we care about the people in Japan, but we should also be concerned just from, I think, the point of view on the West Coast, don't you, of the Pacific Ocean, and what's going to happen with that radiation. That's got to be a concern.
Yeah, it's ironic timing. Here we are on the third anniversary, and the oceanic plume is just arriving on the west coast of North America. So it's already reached the Canadian shores of the Gulf of Alaska. It'll probably reach Seattle next month and then work its way southward from there by summer. So, you know, bioconcentration of radioactive poison in the food chain is kind of the risk. And U.S. standards for food are 12 times weaker than Japan's. So we could be importing food that's unfit for human consumption in Japan in terms of radioactive contamination.
Wow, 12 times weaker?
Yeah, the numbers are 100 becquerels per kilogram in Japan. That's the permissible limit. Here, it's 1,200.
Oh, that's awful. And so there are a couple of things to be concerned with, obviously. The water, obviously, the Pacific, and, of course, what we're talking about with food as well. And so when people hear this, because you know the tendency is, well, that happened in Japan, and it's terrible, and we feel awful. But, oh, it's a bunch of nonsense that trying to talk about what's happened with the plants and the radiation fears. I mean, these are real fears. You're going deep on this at Beyond Nuclear, aren't you?
Yeah, we're a watchdog on the nuclear power industry, mostly focused on the U.S. industry, and we have 23 identical twins to Fukushima Daiichi here in the United States. So remember, Fukushima Daiichi was a General Electric boiling water reactor of the Mark I design that melted down times three at units 1, 2, and 3. We have 23 of those same vintage, identical design here in the United States, and our Nuclear Regulatory Commission is as much in collusion with our industry as the Japanese regulator was over there.
Wow, so 23, and when we look at those reactors, do you think people should be concerned after they're seeing this catastrophe with Tokyo Electric?
Well, you know, we're looking at 50-mile-an-hour winds here in Washington, D.C. tonight, and the power keeps going out. If you lose the electric grid at a nuclear power plant and the emergency diesel generators don't work, you are in a heap of trouble right away. That's exactly what happened at Fukushima Daiichi. It was an earthquake that took out the electric grid and a tsunami that took out the emergency diesel generators. There's so many pathways to catastrophe at U.S. reactors, be it a tornado, which has happened. There were Fukushima twins that got hit by a major tornado at Browns Ferry, Alabama. And, you know, by the skin of our teeth, by sheer luck, by the grace of God, they were able to get the emergency diesels running. But we have a long history in this country, 75 instances where emergency diesel generators were called upon and they didn't work in the past decade or 15 years. And one of those examples in Ohio was a tornado strike on a nuclear power plant, and then the diesels didn't work. And they had a very dicey 48 hours at that plant. They had to keep bringing back to life the last remaining diesel generator, and it gave up the ghost just after they'd restored the electric grid. That's how close we came to a meltdown in Ohio in 1998.
Wow. And you know, when you talk about nuclear power and then you look at France, and they'll say, listen, this is what you should be doing because it's cleaner, it's safer, it's all these things, 1, 2, and 3. But that's not true when you scratch the surface. As you said, 75 instances is pretty frightening, I think, especially when you're just scraping by the skin of your teeth. Why don't people know more about this?
Well, the Prime Minister of Japan, who was serving during the Fukushima crisis, Naoto Kan, just said that the nuclear power industry in Japan is the most powerful political and economic lobby in their country. And I think the same can be said here in the United States. Certainly, the nuclear industry is one of the biggest players in town in Washington, D.C., and at the national level. And part of that is a huge PR machine. And so they have a lot of money to throw at brainwashing people, especially locally. You know, a lot of times nuclear reactors are the biggest source of tax revenue for a county that hosts the reactors. You know, they throw their pocket change around, but it's the biggest charitable contributions to local nonprofits. They just kind of buy their way into acceptance in a community. So a lot of times it takes outsiders who are not on the take to raise a stink. And we're seeing that in places like Vermont, where the state of Vermont and the people of Vermont finally said, hey, look, we've had enough of this Fukushima twin, and it's going to be shut down by the end of this year, which is really good news.
And that was because the people were really diligent in pushing that and checking safety and looking at numbers, right?
It was a 40-year campaign, all told.
Yeah.
Way before Fukushima, they got the state in the right place, and, you know, they prevailed.
There's definitely movement afoot to create more nuclear reactors, more nuclear power plants, I'll call them that. Do you think we'll see more of them in the United States?
Yeah, the industry calls it the nuclear renaissance, and we call it the nuclear relapse. And the only way that they've gotten away with even breaking ground for two new reactors in Georgia, two new reactors in South Carolina, is gouging the ratepayers. So you've got groups like ARP, which are up in arms because these retired people are not going to see 1 watt of electricity delivered to them before they pass away. It takes that long to build atomic reactors, and yet they're being charged. They've had a half dozen uprates on electricity bills in South Carolina in the past few years, and it's not even enough for the Georgia reactors. They've gone to the federal treasury. They've gotten loans and loan guarantees to the tune of $8.3 billion out of the Obama administration. This is just a money-making machine for these companies. They don't even care if they actually build the things as long as they're getting paid all this money.
But wait a second. I thought that the Obama administration was about green and alternatives.
It's a part of that lobbying power. I mean, I remember when Obama said, no lobbyists in my administration, we won't do business with lobbyists. Well, the nuclear lobby is alive and well in this country. They spend something like $1.5 million a week lobbying Congress and the White House. And this nuclear loan guarantee program is an example of that. Obama tried over and over again to majorly expand the amount of money involved. We're talking tens of billions of dollars. It was a tremendous grassroots victory that pushed that back. And once Fukushima went down, he didn't bring up these huge expansions anymore. But they did grant this $8.3 billion for two new reactors in Georgia. If it goes belly up, the American taxpayer gets left holding the bag.
Do you think it's one of those things where, okay, Fukushima, people take that to heart, but then there's other people, like I said, well, that's in Japan, but, and I hope this never happens, but if we had another Three Mile Island or whatnot, or we saw some kind of a catastrophe, would that be the only way to really take this down?
I hope and pray not. That's our job on a daily basis, is to try to prevent nuclear catastrophes. But, you know, the power of this industry, they have done all they can to, you know, suppress the truth in Japan, suppress the truth in Chernobyl, even suppress the truth at Three Mile Island. It's always a battle to get the truth out. And, you know, one of the myths is that no one died at Three Mile Island. Here we come up on the 35th anniversary of the Three Mile Island meltdown later this month. Believe you me, if you talk to people who live downwind and downstream of Three Mile Island, there is an epidemic of cancer. There's epidemiological studies like Steve Wing at University of North Carolina who found increases in things like lung cancer immediately directly downwind where the radioactive plumes would have traveled at Three Mile Island.
Wow. Kevin Camps, Beyond Nuclear, thanks for coming on the show. If somebody wants more information on what you guys do, where do they go?
Yeah, our website is www.beyondnuclear.org.
All right, keep doing what you're doing, and thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Bye-bye.
I'm waking up, the action does. I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the catacombs.
Does advertising on the Genesis Communications Radio Network actually bring positive results? Let's ask
Thomas Baldrick from Freeze Dry Guy.
And do the GCN listeners let you know they heard your ad?
Customers do let us know they've heard Freeze Dry Guy ads on GCN. They seem to be very loyal listeners to GCN, and they stay with those shows, and subsequently they stay with our business too.
Looking for positive results? Contact Lee Wickenhauser at 877-996-4327, extension 107.
I'm David Cordani, President and CEO of Cigna. We're proud to support the March of Dimes by walking in the March for Babies. It feels great to know that the money we raise funds life-saving research and programs that improve the health of babies. With your help, we can make this year better than ever. Join Cigna and our coworkers across the country in March for Babies to help more moms have full-term pregnancies and healthier babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org and march to help our babies. Thank you.
Free from the shackles of corporate America, we're the place for independent thinkers. GCN.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey Guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day. Visit the Berkey Guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of the Berkey Guy.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL.
Lock in your price now. Take delivery in spring.
866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
It's no secret that silver is one of the oldest known natural antibiotics, but the mainstream media will never tell we the people this information. Why? Many drug companies and politicians have dangerous alliances that manipulate the way we live by prescribing drugs that only manage disease, keeping us dependent on big pharma. And with Obamacare at our doorstep, we are now forced into a system that many of us do not want any part of. And no man or government has the right to dictate how we as free people choose to take care of our health. The patriots at utopiasilver.com hold this truth dear. Colloidal and ionic silver supplements from utopiasilver.com open the door to a whole new world of natural healing for the body and the mind. Visit utopiasilver.com and discover the safe and effective health benefits of colloidal and ionic silver. Call 888-213-4338, 888-213-4338, and talk to the patriots at utopiasilver.com, a leading source of natural healing using colloidal silver, colloidal gold, minerals, vitamins, and herbs. utopiasilver.com.
Well, St. Patrick's Day is almost here, and you've heard me talk about St. Patrick's Day before, the misconceptions, things people don't realize, what does it mean to the people in Ireland, having gone to Ireland a year and a half ago. You know, who really was St. Patrick? The best person to talk about this is William Federer. He is the president of Amerisearch, and he is the author of so many books, including this one, St. Patrick, the real story of his amazing life from tragedy to triumph. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Bill.
Kate, great to be with you.
So what is it about, first of all, what are some of the misconceptions about St. Patrick that are still flying around out there?
Well, the first thing is he was a real person. He was born around 389 A.D. at a time when the Roman Empire was falling. Sort of interesting, China built the Great Wall of China in several sections, but the Han Dynasty completed a bunch, and this prevented the Huns from attacking into China, so they turned west, and it started a domino effect of tribes being displaced across Central Asia, and these spilled over the Roman borders, and Rome began to fall, sort of like illegal immigrants. But there were a lot of our ancestors. And then Rome had its military stretched around the world, putting out these global fires. And then Rome had to raise taxes to pay for it all. One historian said the tax collector was worse than the barbarian. They had exposure of unwanted infants in the Roman Empire, their version of abortion. They had homosexual bathhouses. They had violent entertainment in the Colosseums. They had outsourced all their grain production to North Africa. That was the grain basket. And one of the tribes that overran the Roman Empire was the Vandals. You can imagine what they did when they went through town. They vandalized. But they captured North Africa, held back the grain ships, and Rome was brought to its knees. Then they had terrorist attacks. Groups like Attila the Hun and the Visigoths would conquer entire cities, and so Rome had to pull its legions back from the frontiers, like Britain, and to protect the city of Rome. And so Britain, a Roman colony, was now left unprotected, and that's when marauding bands, gangs, began to rob, steal, and kidnap. And so this is when Patrick was kidnapped. Probably maybe around the year 405 A.D., and he was taken to Ireland and sold as a slave to the Druid chieftain Milchew. And the Druids had human sacrifice. They believed that the woods were filled full of spirits that needed to be appeased, and they would chop off heads and drink out of goblets made out of skulls and have shrunken heads on their belts. The Druids were where we get Halloween, basically. Patrick remembers the faith of his parents. They were Christians, and the word Patricus means royalty or a higher class. Plebeian was the poor people, and the patricians were the higher ones. So we don't know much about Patrick other than he was from a well-to-do Roman family in Britain. But he remembers his parents' faith, the Christian faith, and then he has a dream telling him to escape. Long story short, he goes back to Ireland, to Britain, and he gets involved in church work, and when he's 40 years old, he has a dream. And he writes this in his The Confession of Patrick, a document he wrote later in life. He said, I saw a man named Victoricus coming as if from Ireland with innumerable letters, and he handed one to me. And as I read the head of it, I thought I heard at that moment the voice of those who were beside the wood of Falkirk on the Western Sea in Ireland, crying out, "Please, holy boy, come and walk among us again." Their cry pierced to my very heart. I could read no more, so I awoke. Well, Patrick took that as a divine call to go back to Ireland, probably around 415 A.D., and he is courageous enough to go directly into the dens of these Druid chieftains, sort of like, you know, take me to your drug lord. He presents the gospel to them in their own language, which he had learned when he was a slave. But as soon as it became clear that he was preaching a new religion, the Druid priests wanted to kill Patrick. They realized they would be displaced from their position of influence with the chieftains. Well, this particular chieftain said, well, there's no hurry to kill him. He's unarmed and sort of interesting, and we don't get visitors that often. So he let Patrick live and gave him a plot of land. He built his first church, and the chieftain ended up converting. And there were about 30 chieftains across Northern Ireland, and Patrick would do this top-down evangelism, where he would go to the top chieftain and boldly confront the Druid priests. And one story that became popular is the contest at Tara, T-A-R-I. Is it okay that I go through this?
Yeah, we like this.
Well, there was a large field or a plain, and then there was this hill that rose up, and the chieftain's habit was to make everyone extinguish their fires, and whoever kept their fire going would be killed, and then everyone would have to bring some sacrifice or gift or, goat or something to the Druids to get some coals to relight their fire for the next year. And whoever refused to put out their fire would be killed. The one biographer in the late 600s wrote that the custom was that whoever lit a fire before the king on that night of the year would be put to death. Patrick lit the paschal fire on the hill of Slane, the high hill. When the people saw Patrick's fire throughout the plain, the king ordered 27 chariots to seize Patrick. Seeing the impious heathen were about to attack him, Patrick rose and said loudly, "May the Lord come and scatter his enemy." By this disaster, caused by Patrick's prayer, 7 times 7 men fell, and the king, driven by fear, came on bent knee before the holy man. So you get a little idea, sort of like, you get the picture of Moses in Pharaoh's court throwing down his staff, and the other guys throw theirs down, and they turn into snakes, but Moses swallows up the other. So it was this contest. One was a Druid invoked a fog, and the historian said the fog was so thick that no one could see, and Patrick said, "We'll cause the fog to disperse," and the Druid was unable, and Patrick prays, and the sky clears, and And then it says that the druid was consumed with flames and died. I don't know what that was all about. But nevertheless, the king said it's better to convert than die, so he converted. But these are the stories that were passed down. Patrick found Ireland heathen and left it Christian. He baptized 120,000 people.
Wow.
He was always bothered by the fact that he was kidnapped before he finished his education. I know it's sort of hard for us to think that was something to worry about. But he would say, I, Patrick, a sinner, a very unlearned man, to be sure, I long had it in mind to write, but I was afraid lest I should fall into the condemnations of men's tongues. So we see he was always bothered by this feeling of inadequacy. But in a sense, that helped him because he communicated the gospel in simpleman's terms. In other words, he used the three-leaf clover to teach the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, three in one. But he had a lot of challenges. He wrote in his confession, daily I expect murder, fraud, captivity, but I fear none of these things because of the promises of heaven. He says one time they caught him for 2 weeks and put him in irons, but on the 14th day the Lord delivered me out of their power. And so he wasn't just this nice little, you know, leprechaun person. He was a very bold, courageous person. And then he started 300 churches, and these were very independent, right, because Rome was being attacked by Attila the Hun, so the last thing they cared about was this outback of Ireland. And it was interesting that in the next century, it was these Irish churches that sent missionaries back to Britain and back into Europe to help convert those heathen hordes that had overrun the Roman Empire. So it sort of went full circle. The heathen hordes caused Rome to pull his legions back, and that's when Patrick was kidnapped. But in the next century, it was the Irish that Patrick had evangelized that sent missionaries back into Europe. It's a fascinating story, and here we are 1,600 years later, still having a day on our calendar to remember Patrick. You think, what would you and I have to do to have a day to remember us a millennium in the future?
Yeah, what would we have to do? And I think, you know, you brought up the shamrock. That's huge. That's part of a story that a lot of people have heard. But and also the banishing of the snakes from Ireland, right?
Well, there are no snakes in Ireland, and but back then it was warmer, right? The Vikings, you know, they had the groats grew crops there in Newfoundland, but then there was the Little Ice Age, and the whole world got colder. Sorry, Al Gore, about global warming. The world got colder, and for hundreds of years, the populations in Europe migrated south. And so at Patrick's time, it was warmer there in Ireland, and there could have been snakes, and maybe he did drive them out. Some think that may have been figurative, that he was driving out demons, but that story is always associated with Patrick.
Yeah, wow. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. That was great. It's like a history lesson just jammed in there that the Druids, you painted such an incredible picture. I'm just picturing that right now in my mind, what that was like for St. Patrick. And as you said, it's crazy, 120,000 people baptized.
Right, and now this is all in a book I wrote. It's called The Real History of St. Patrick, and then I also have a DVD, 3 half-hour programs on this, and it's available at AmericanMinute.com. But there was an Irish potato famine in 1846. Millions of Irish Catholics came to America, brought a lot of the traditions with them, and that's a whole other chapter in the book. But it's a fascinating story that we can remember and be encouraged that if you're living at a time when your empire, your civilization is being invaded and crumbling and having immorality, that the good Lord can use one person to do some great things that can impact millions and still be talked about 1,000 years later.
Yeah, no kidding. Well said. All right, so we'll check that out. Thanks so much, William Federer. Happy St. Patrick's Day again.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks. Thanks, Bill. That was great.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
Yeah, that was great. I'll push those CDs. That's great in that book because I think people are really interested in it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. There's a bunch more, and you know, because the Irish were Catholic, and then the British were Anglican, and in the 1600s, the Anglicans invaded Ireland and killed 300,000 Irish and sold 500,000 Irish into slavery. In the 1600s, more Irish were sold into slavery than Africans.
Yeah, and people don't realize that, yeah. Yep, and, exactly. I learned that when I was there, and it was kind of the eeny, meeny, miny, mo. They would just slice people off. It was brutal. Some of the stories I heard, crazy. Thanks.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call and how much will it cost? Our friends at LegalShield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, LegalShield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to LegalShield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let LegalShield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case.
It's that time of year again, and you know what that means. Cold and flu season. But don't worry. HerbalHealer.com has you and your loved ones covered with our safe and natural products. Cold and flu fighters like beta-glucans, olive leaf antiviral capsules, grapefruit seed extract, HHA 4-herb capsules, elderberry power, and respirate. And don't forget about oregacillin for the lungs, normally $34.95. On sale now for only $25. Vitamin D3, 120-count soft gels, only $9. Whole body and homeopathic detoxes for the lungs, kidneys, liver, lymph, and brain. Normally $26.95, now just $20. HerbalHealer.com also offers correspondence courses to teach you how to handle your health naturally. And as always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click the Winter Specials button to save on our natural cold and flu fighting products. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
It's time to get your green on with the great green sale from Freeze Dry Guy. Now through St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, cases of delicious freeze-dried vegetables, green beans, and green peas are now on sale at veteran-owned freezedryguy.com. You don't need to be Irish to feel like you have pots of gold with a healthy supply of these delicious, nutritious green vegetables. They're perfect for your emergency preparedness needs or outdoor activities from camping to RV travel. Green beans and green peas, easy to prepare, easy to enjoy, and now easier than ever to buy. How about some green backs in your wallet or purse just for ordering? Act now, and Freeze Dry Guy will give you $25 in survival bucks for every case you purchase by St. Paddy's Day. So get your green on now, veggie lovers. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on to freezedryguy.com. FreezeDryGuy.com.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough.
Once again, we're skidding to the exits here of this hour of America Tonight. And the mailbag is full, so guess what? We're gonna head to the mailroom and check the mail.
You have mail, mistress.
Thank you very much. This one from Al, who says, no surprise, Kate, Crimea voted for the Russian Union. They say there's something like 60,000 troops on and near that border. I wonder if they'll try to eat up more of that Ukrainian territory, and I can't wait to see what these sanctions are. Yeah, thanks for that. It's true. The they think the goals are far beyond that peninsula, and Putin now takes another step forward in what he said he was going to do, and with this referendum. The United States threatens, okay, there's going to be sanctions, so what are the sanctions? You know what the vote total was like? Something like 95% supported joining Russia. But that's after half the votes were counted. They say there was some boycotting going on and some other things. So even some of the people from that Crimea area loyal to Kiev boycotted the referendum, and the EU and the United States condemned it as illegal. So there you have it. It's the votes are in, though. And what can, you know, you see, you have Putin and Obama speaking over the phone on Sunday, and then the Kremlin and the White House releasing different accounts of what that conversation was. So the Kremlin said both agreed to find a way to stabilize the Ukraine, and that Putin had stressed that the Kiev government failed to curb the violence by the nationalists. The White House said that Obama had insisted that the referendum was illegal and would never be accepted, and called for Moscow to support an international monitoring mission in eastern Ukraine. Which version is true? See, the referendum didn't have an option for anyone who wanted the constitutional arrangement to remain unchanged. I mean, it was just, voters were asked, do you want to join Russia or have more autonomy with Ukraine? That's it. That's what the vote was. So what does it mean? We'll see what it means on Monday. We'll see what it means coming up on Monday. All right, here's one from Sally who says, Katie Delaney, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. I wonder if, like my family, you eat corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day or do anything to celebrate the holiday. Yeah, you know, a lot of years I did the corned beef and cabbage thing, and I suppose I can see myself having some corned beef during the day. In my family, it used to be that some people would take a shot of Jameson to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. But there's parades all over the place. Savannah is a cool place to be. They turn things green in Savannah and Chicago. The river is green, and, of course, New York. It's craziness on St. Patrick's Day. In fact, we even went to New York a couple years ago for St. Patrick's Day. So, yes, to answer your question, corned beef and cabbage, bring it on. Absolutely. It's funny because when I was in Ireland, they were talking about how St. Patrick's Day was a disappointment, actually, that it wasn't as celebrated as it was in the United States now, that it didn't used to always be that way, but they've sort of changed that whole parade thing depending on the place in Ireland that you're talking about. So happy St. Patrick's Day, by the way, to everybody. This one from Bob, who he emails us a lot. Bob says, Kate, this Malaysian airplane that's missing is very troublesome. I personally think it's a hijacking, and now that's been confirmed. I'm sure you saw over the weekend they talked about the pilot and the co-pilot a little bit more and searching their places, plus the ties to a terrorist who had contact with somebody who was a pilot in Malaysia who talked about hijacking an airliner. Yeah, we talked about that actually on the show. It's good to point that out, Bob. But it was what's being reported. It was reported in the British papers that Sajid Mohammed Vedat, who's a British-born Al-Qaeda informant, he said last week that he was aware of a plot by a group of Malaysians, one who was a pilot, to hijack a plane. He said once he supplied the cell with a shoe bomb, and that the 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's now in Gitmo, was the plot's original organizer. So they say the evidence is credible that he's in hiding, but he met with a jihadist, one who was a pilot in Afghanistan, and had given him a shoe bomb to take control of a plane. So, boy, that's terrifying to think of that. And at the trial in New York of Salman Abu Ghaith, who was Osama bin Laden's son-in-law, Vedat said, I gave one of my shoes to the Malaysians. I think it was to access the cockpit. He told the court that the Malaysian plot was being masterminded by Mohammed, and, you know, that, so we'll see if any of that comes to fruition, because remember, this plane vanished on March 8th. There are 239 people on board, and certainly there, where there's a will, there's a way. There would be areas where you would think that perhaps they could land. The areas that they're expanding to look for the planes is, you know, they're trying to look, they say they're trying to look at large tracts of land crossing 11 countries, deep and remote oceans and all kinds of things. I mean, what's going to happen here? What's ultimately, what is the deal? Purposely, they went off radar. They turned it off. They know that it was turned off. So this was intentional. It wasn't some unforeseen thing. They had enough fuel after that happened to fly for 7.5 to 8 hours. 7.5 to 8 hours. So there is way more to this story. Way more to this story than they're saying. All right, here's another one. This one from Philip, who says, Kate, first time that I have emailed the show. So excited for March Madness. I have to tell you, I'm not really a huge sports fan, but I like filling out the brackets. And in my group of friends and inside the office, hundreds of people will fill it out, which means you have a great chance to win some cash. And I'm wondering if you're going to go over your picks in the brackets. Well, I could certainly do that. I don't know how exciting that would be for a lot of people. We're going to do our own little version of March Madness. We're going to have a nail the score thing. I'll pick out some of these games as we get deeper into this. And, you know, there is that whole bracket challenge, Warren Buffett's deal, that if you fill out a perfect bracket, you'd get $1 billion. But, you know, if filling out a perfect bracket at the end, let's say you get the whole bracket right, and then you even call the championship game, you still have to have a tiebreaker there, you have to have a score there. You know, it's not so the whole thing isn't easy. It's pretty tough. It'd be pretty tough to have a perfect bracket. In fact, the odds are crazy. Any math major, you ask them to calculate it, and the odds are infinitesimal. Let's put it that way. All right, for those of you listening to me in D.C. or listening in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area, get ready, because snow is what you'll probably wake up to. Could be just a couple of inches. But oh, what a drag for people who are tired of winter. Winter is not done with you. You know what? 1 or 2 inches, if it's not slippery nonsense, not so bad. When you start to get into the 6, 10, and 12 inches, that it's not so great when you're really tired of the white stuff.
Curious about what comes next? Next is the feeling of vulnerability you get after you arrive home to discover your house has been ransacked by burglars. Fool the bad guys with a new improved fake TV. You asked for it, we listened, and we made our new fake TV 3 times brighter than our previous model. The brightness of our new fake TV is equivalent to a 40-inch TV. It simulates the color and motion of a real TV while you're away from home. And when burglars think someone is home watching television, they're likely to pass your house and move on to an easier target. The new, brighter fake TV is only $39.95 and includes free shipping. Go to faketv.com or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. That's 877-532-5388 or go to faketv.com.
Fake TV, the burglar deterrent.